before it was just, you know, not accepting people, now it's killing people.
Bangladesh's LGBT community and their supporters say they've been forced into hiding in fear for their lives following the murder of two LGBT leaders.
Both men were gay rights activists and they had been threatened before. Police say that a group of five or six men posing as couriers burst into the building armed with machetes and hacked the men to death.
Gay sex is outlawed in Bangladesh, where Manan was pushing boundaries by publishing the country's first LGBT magazine.
What you're hearing is coverage of the deaths of Zulhas Manan and Mahbub Tanoik, two Bangladeshi LGBT activists who were targeted and murdered by Al-Qaeda in the Indian subcontinent in April 2016. The murders made international news. Now, over 8 years later, Bangladesh is once again in the global spotlight.
Protesters in Bangladesh have one demand: the government must step down immediately. And they say they'll stay in the streets until they do. Students and opposition supporters want justice after an estimated 200 people were killed and thousands injured last month while protesting against a government job quota scheme. The scheme has been dropped, but that's not enough for the protesters.
Stunning developments out of Bangladesh today. The military says Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina has resigned and fled the country. She was the world's longest-serving female leader, and her sudden exodus follows weeks of anti-government protests, which have led to more than 200 deaths.
As evidenced by the extrajudicial killings during the revolution, Bangladesh's human rights record falls far short of international human rights standards. Its record on LGBT human rights is even more concerning. Section 377 of the British colonial-era penal code criminalizes same-sex activity. According to the Franklin Marshall Global Barometers, the world's largest databases on LGBT human rights, Bangladesh scores an F, or a failing grade, on both gay rights and transgender rights. With Nobel Peace Prize-winning economist Dr. Muhammad Yunus assuming leadership in the interim government, there has been talk of a constitutional convention. The five proposed state principles are equality, human dignity, social justice, pluralism, and democracy. As the country gears up for fundamental reforms, I sat down with two Bangladeshi LGBT scholar activists to learn what this moment means for the country's LGBT population. My first interviewee is a longtime personal friend, Russell Ahmed. Russell is an assistant professor in the Department of Theater, Film, and Media Arts at The Ohio State University, where his scholarship focuses on queer issues and migration. He's the co-founder and editor of the first and only Bengali language LGBT magazine in Bangladesh, and also an asylee. He was forced to flee the country after his co-founder, Zulhas Manan, was killed by Islamic extremists in 2016. Russell, thank you for coming onto this podcast.
Indira, thank you. Great to see you.
Great to see you as well. I remember we spoke over the phone in July of 2024. You thought it was really important that the queer community get involved with the national revolution. Why is that?
Because the queer issue never exists outside of, like, you know, any other local nationalist or even like global politics. It is very much part of that. And particularly last couple of years, I think the experience of my own migration and displacement, that a lot of realization came into it that, you know, we cannot isolate ourselves. We cannot isolate our movement, that we cannot be free if one of us is not free. The student uprising in Bangladesh was something that I think the global community could learn from, especially the queer community could learn from.
How did the queer community participate in the movement?
There was a massive queer engagement, and that was kind of surprising because at least the public perception is like in Bangladesh, the student movements are male dominated. You know, no demand can be subtle. No demand is a demand unless it fits into this heteronormative, like Muslim, like, you know, Sunni imagination of, like, you know, what that demand should look like. Once the movement started getting its momentum, there was a lot of queer community members who got involved. It was a paradox for queer people. The fascist regime that, like, that was in Bangladesh, like the Awami League regime, was trying to create this global perception that they are feminist, they were secular, and they're also speaking for trans rights for some time. So they were weaponizing this sort of human rights issues. It was a big choice for queer people. I'm not saying that everyone stood up against this fascism. There were people who thought that government was needed because they were secular and they're like, you know, more trans-friendly, even at the cost of their fascist behavior. But there were many queer people who didn't think that way. And there are many queer people who changed their mind when the revolution was unfolding.
Russell's account is one of a marginalized group attempting to gain mainstream acceptance by participating in a patriotic political movement. I turned to another scholar, Arifa Rahman, to get an overview of the legal challenges facing LGBT individuals in Bangladesh. Ari studied law, gender, and sexuality as a Vanderbilt scholar at the New York University School of Law. He's currently a research fellow at the NYU Center for Human Rights and the author of The Missing Q in the Constitution Making of Bangladesh. In that article, he argues for explicit constitutional protections for Bangladesh's LGBT community. The article was published in the Daily Star, Bangladesh's largest English language newspaper, but was taken down after violent backlash. I asked him how he navigated this environment of fear and censorship.
I was very hesitant about writing on this topic, to be honest, considering the repressive environment that sort of like, you know, it started, especially during the late previous prime minister's regime. There was a rise in anti-gender movement. So you would not necessarily dare to engage in these kind of works and then sort of like, you know, get published publicly. Particularly two reasons motivated me. Having a law background, I came to know about the constitutional drafting process, especially about the first constitution, that drafting of which took place, I think, in 1972. Historical invisibility or the exclusion of sexuality and gender in the constitution making process kind of motivated me first. And then secondly, since it's a new moment or second chance to reimagine Bangladesh, I was like, why not inviting those who are involving in this kind of law and policy making to engage those people who are still kind of marginalized and queer.
So you published the article in the Daily Star in October 2024. What happened after?
Then once it gets published, those are usually lead these anti-gender movements currently on social media and then, of course, in real life. They sort of shared my article using derogatory terms and remarks. And there was quite sort of like, you know, threats of violence and involvement in the comment section as well. Like they will burn down the Daily Star news outlet because sponsoring these kind of Western ideologies, anti-Islamic ideologies in a Muslim majority country like Bangladesh. There are threats for those who are advocating for queer rights. There are threats for like, you know, mob violence. I was still not sure, like, you know, that it would eventually lead to censorship. I thought like, you know, like other reactionary movements, it would just eventually sort of like, you know, dry away. But no, things got worse. Like the Daily Star itself has received a counter of threats, which eventually compelled them to take it down from the website, which is, as you could sort of see, no longer available in the website.
So where do we go from here? Is this the right time to bring a legal challenge to strike down Section 377?
I don't think so. Challenge Section 377 at the highest court of the country. But to do that, it's a very challenging task. We need lawyers who have a good understanding of what human rights paradigm look like, how it could be justified from the constitutional point of view in a country like Bangladesh, where different sort of like, you know, dynamics play out, post-colonialism, religious imperatives, and their commitment to human rights, universal human rights framework as well. Who would be the lawyers? Who would be willing to take Section 377 to the court to challenge it? I do not necessarily think that the current moment, there would be an environment where we could directly engage with this kind of strategic human rights litigation. People might disagree with me. People might say that this is the pivotal moment where we could sort of redefine our human rights framework. And I definitely disagree, considering the rise of anti-gender movements or anti-LGBTQ movements in Bangladesh.
Russell offered a similar opinion.
I do think like it needs to be fought from all different fronts, but the community relationship building is probably the most important in Bangladeshi context. It is probably safest at this point and also less stressful as opposed to fighting more publicly. Let's say someone wants to take down Section 377. we are the victim of whatever discrimination that exists, but we are the one who have to eradicate it. And it's a big burden. It's a huge, huge, you know, like expectation on unfair to many, many ways for the fact that I had to become an activist. In any movement, you would see like a lot of people would say, I was not meant to be an activist, but the situation made me. That this like young generation, they are like more self-assured, you know, they're trying to become more organized even under this kind of extreme harsh condition. They're becoming more political. There is not enough critical mass, but there is a critical consciousness, there is a critical awareness. That sort of changes keep me really hopeful about the entire movement, and the future of it is probably going to get only stronger. So we are very resilient, as you know. As we all know.
LGBT human rights are the civil rights battle of the 21st century. In Bangladesh, despite a moment of intersectional solidarity as the country took down its fascist regime, there are some battles that still remain unfought. 8 years after Zulhas Manan and Mahbub Binoy were killed, the fight for queer rights, queer dignity, and queer freedom in Bangladesh continues.